This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 240, Game of Life. Hello, this is Michael Martin. I'm here today along with my co-host and friend, Mr. Michael Rowe, to bring you another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. Hey, Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
I'm glad to be back. It's been a little bit of a summer break, as we normally do in the summer, with all kinds of life, work, and things happening. So I'm so excited to just dive right in, because we've got all kinds of great links and ideas and user suggestions for us to talk about. So what do you say? Should we start the car and start driving?
Yeah, if we have to.
All right. Well,
so I think we can make it fun, though.
We'll try. We'll put the key in the ignition. So from our friend Kirk, we got a very intriguing article from Logic Magazine called Chasing the Pink. And this particular article is actually back from January, but it's a really intriguing read about how gamification is applied in the industry for drivers that drive for Lyft or for Uber. And I found this super intriguing to me because of the way that the feedback changes behavior by the driver and the way that it flows in and how the algorithms that these particular companies use to incent behavior. So it's not just on the user side where you've got an upcharge related to having heavy traffic, so therefore it'll cost you more if you get to place, but there are ways to incent drivers that haven't been driving for a while to kind of get back on the road and drive some more and compete well for having great scores and crowd out the infrequent and few bad scores they might get. So very much appealing to that whole dopamine structure of feeling the love coming back from the reviews, keeping yourself in the green zone, I guess, of being happy according to what the metrics are saying against your competition in the area and around the world, and monetarily incented to achieve certain bonuses that are unlocked by algorithms that are not easily predictable, which are all key ways of how gaming and gambling and gamification works. So,
yeah, I read this article and I definitely thought it was kind of in my mind, the darker side of gamification sense that it really kind of forced the driver into doing things, one bad score and then it messed up an average, right? Mm-hmm. And they had to really, really work hard and try to do things to offset that one bad score, because under a certain score, it actually impacted, if I remember correctly, their reimbursement, right? And so it kind of pits the drivers against each other, as well as pitting the customers against the drivers to some degree too. And it got me thinking, and it caused me to do something I do periodically, which is wipe a bunch of games off my mobile devices, because of the similar mechanics that happen in the world building games. And one of the ones I'm playing right now is the Game of Thrones game, where it's a conquest game and you partner with others and you build up your dragon and you build up your troops and you do the leveling of trees, and you have to build up certain amount of supplies in order to upgrade things. And the mechanic that they add into the game to kind of offset that is you can pay to get stuff, mm-hmm. or you can raid other people's towns and castles to get the supplies that you need.
Oh.
And you can see how this goes.
I can see how this goes.
You cannot be people are disincented to attack you if you have less than like a million units saved up of whatever units it is for supplies. But over a million, they're incented to tack you. And once you get into kind of the mid part of the game, you need like 2 or 3 million units in order to upgrade things.
Mm-hmm.
So right as you start getting the dopamine drip that things are going well, you immediately become a target by other players. So to keep getting your dopamine drip, you can either attack other players or you can pay money. So it kind of forces people to make that decision to either attack the people who are paying money to build up their stuff, which makes them pay even more money because it's kind of this self-reinforcing rule of the game that if you pay money, you're now a bigger target. Or you pay money so you can upgrade quicker, so you can defend yourself better.
And have an opportunity to pay more money.
Exactly. And so I kind of had that mindset as I was reading the beginning, where it's like, you know, I was doing really well and I had, you know, pretty high, good driver, positive attitude stuff. And then one or two things dropped a score, right? Dropped a score. And then it became a chase, a grind, basically, to get back up to good. And it really kind of changes the dynamics and the incentives of the game, right? I mean, here's somebody who was working, driving in order to get some money to finish up their degree, and basically has to put their degree on hold in order to play the game, to chase the scores, to get the revenue in order to do the school, right?
Right.
So it kind of, as I was reading it, I was just in a bad frame of mind, but I really looked at the negative side of it instead of the positive of, oh, you'll have better drivers and they'll be in a better attitude and blah, 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 blah. So what do you think about that?
You know, I think you're right. And I think there are a number of darker sides to all this. And the way this article concludes really kind of hits home for me, right? It says, and this is the thing that is so brilliant and awful about Lyft and Uber's gamification. It preys on our desire to be of service, to be liked, to be good. And on weeks that I am rated highly, I am more motivated to drive. On weeks that I am rated poorly, I am more motivated to drive. It works on me, even though I know better. So that quote kind of at the end of the article here really kind of brings it home for me that on either side of the equation, it's incenting the behaviors that the company wants to get out of the people that are taking advantage of the app and using it to earn an income.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was reading a book on building platforms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the technical aspect, but the business aspect of how do you create a dominant platform position and creating that double-sided dependency between the providers of content to the platform and the consumers of content to the platform, right? So you want to become a double-ended platform. And I think these types of gamifications of the process create great lock-in and beautiful double-sided platforms. But you have to understand the darker side.
Well, you do. And sometimes you willingly go into it. And sometimes you find yourself in a spot where you're running in place just to keep up. And
I sold my soul to the company stove.
there was I'll have to find a link for this, but driving home from the beautiful North Carolina mountains this past weekend, I was listening to a show on NPR called Reveal, and there was a discussion there about how people were getting more engaged and involved in online entertainment, but looks like gambling kinds of games, and how that turns mm-hmm. into real money and potentially substantial real money, because the game is classified as entertainment, and that's all it does. It doesn't provide you with a chance to win the money that you put into the game. It just gives you more opportunities to play the game.
To spend.
Yeah. and it's
like the whole loot box controversy.
The loot box controversy. Exactly. So, There are things that are really, really good about how gamification and games can help draw people in the right direction. There are also ways that potentially could be exploiting the labor force. No one is causing anyone to be an Uber or a Lyft or other kind of driver, or to play the entertainment games that are looking for money if you want to play them for longer and avoid a cool off period, or protect your what you've established already, because we know psychologically losing something that you have is worse than trying to get something that you don't have. I don't even know where I'm going with that. So let's talk about facial recognition, because this was a little little interesting point here too. So I thought that this article from Engadget was intriguing about how the driver role is now increasingly having all kinds of electronic means of optimizing, in some cases for safety, in some cases for just tracking and knowing what's actually happening. In this case here, looking for drivers that are tired and looking at the facial characteristics, like if I were to be gone, you might know that I was being tired, and you could probably tell that. This particular software harvests this information from, it says, 68 different facial points. And it could be of great use in private vehicles or commercial trucking or in taxis too, so that people are safer all along. And interestingly enough, Uber and Lyft kind of factor into this article too. What did you get anything from this that was other than like, interesting?
Well, it is interesting. if you think about an iPhone, right, or any other mobile device that has facial recognition, or you know, what was it, the bar that was used on the PS, was it the PS2, for like full body motion tracking and things of that nature, or Windows Hello. These are all things that are using facial recognition to infer some kind of data that's relevant in the situation that you're in. The iPad Pro uses the facial camera to detect if you're not looking at it for long enough and to lock the device, right? Mm-hmm. So the iPhone kind of does a similar thing, right? If you have it unlocked and there's an app running but it's not doing active stuff, it will time out, but it'll time out faster, I believe, if you're not actually looking at it.
Exactly. Yes.
Because it thinks there's no attention going on, so why burn battery? Taking that into a safety situation is interesting too. I think I read somewhere that it's like, is it 20%? Or some really large number of the jobs in the U.S. are like trucking jobs. It's not 20%, but it's a huge number just to move things from point A to point B. And if you know truckers, that's a really long, boring job. And, you know, you get tired. You're driving 8, 10, 12 hours a day. So there are safety systems put in cars. Right. There are there are regulations on how long a driver is allowed to drive before they have to take a rest break.
Mm-hmm. And used to be on paper and isn't anymore.
Yeah. It's paper, and then they transit to sensors on the wheels, yep. Sensors in the cab, et cetera. And the basic idea being there are safety considerations. And let's be honest, it's not just about the safety of the driver. It's about the safety of the cargo and the reduction of risk. So any type of financial risk that can be done will be done if it's within an appropriate business case. So I look at this from an exhausted taxi driver perspective, and I think, you know, is there a situation that's causing the calculus of the business case to change? And what they're saying is yes. Because there's competition with these driver services like Lyft and Uber. So taxi drivers who used to be able to say we're the only ones in town because we have a medallion like in New York and can kind of print money are now having a competitive situation. So you want to be driving more to make money. But you get to a point where they were saying there was, 700-something accidents? Can't remember the exact number. But – an increase, 764 car accidents last year just in Moscow, right? that are driven based off of you know, taxis and things. So you think about it, you're saying, well, there's a risk there from a business perspective. There's a financial risk because you have settlements, insurance risk, and a competitive risk. So you now want to put technology in place to offset that risk. And it just adds one more data source to improve and optimize a business process that you know, needs technology to do so. Because if you're incented to make money, to make a living, and you have to write down on paper that you didn't drive for 4 hours, you're going to write it down even if you drive for those 4 hours so that you can get the extra money.
Yeah. Yep. Or that you meet your service level commitment because, you know, perhaps you were delayed by weather and you couldn't, you know, operate the vehicle at the speed that would have allowed you to meet those. So you have to make it up. Yeah. Hard stuff. And I kind of wonder, in the case of Moscow, I mean, this was a do something kind of move here. How many of those accidents maybe were related to driver fatigue versus, you know, other things? So this next article, I think, is one that you will appreciate, given how much I know you like to be in the water. This one is about some goggles, great googly moogly, that are using AR for things that swimmers would care about. So tell me what you thought. I love this. I think it's really good. What do you think?
I saw it in the feed earlier this week. I immediately went to their website, checked it out, signed up on their list to get notifications as it moves forward. This is cool. And then I went and talked to a couple of friends of mine who also swim, and I said, well, what do you think about that? And they're like, wow, that actually makes sense. So what these are AR goggles for swimming that provide you a head-down display, if you want to think about it, of relevant information while swimming. So one of the reasons I upgraded my Apple Watch to an Apple Watch Series 2 back in the day was the Series 0 and the Series 1 did not support swimming.
Right.
The Series 2 did, and I had been using a Garmin Swim to track things like number of strokes, number of laps, the type of strokes, etc. How long did you swim? And I really liked the Apple Watch for adding in the calorie and the heart rate and a couple other things. But anybody who swims in a pool, right, lap swimming, will tell you that you kind of lose track of time. You kind of lose track of your distance, right? You do all these little cheats to say, you know, am I on lap 16 or 32? Okay, I'm on 70, blah, 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 right? And so one of the cheats that I do, even though I have the Apple Watch on, right, which tells me how far I swam, but you kind of have to stop and look at it to do that, is I every four lanes that I swim, I'll put a finger out, right? So think of your two hands and suddenly I'm swimming normal, but my pinky finger on my left hand is pointing out a little funny. So that says I've done 100, and I swim another 100 yards. And then I do the Spock symbol on my left hand. So that's 200, right? And use that to kind of keep track. Where are you in your laps? And it's silly and it's annoying because you lose track. You honestly, I mean, there's times where I've swam and I'm like, oh, that feels great. And I stop and I open up the watch and it's like, what? I missed it. I still have 200 yards to go. God, blah, 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 blah. Really annoying. So these are cool. These are really cool. So they provide lane tracking, lap tracking, stroke tracking, and a head-up display to say, you know, how far have I swum? What's my current 100 meter lap time, right? So I can do my splits, et cetera. And it's all just either in your left or your right eye, right out in front of you while you're swimming the whole time. Very, very cool. I love it.
So I thought you might, and that was one of the reasons why I was like, oh, we got to bring this into the show. The flip of this too is this is a great
flip start.
As in a flip turn. Yeah. So try this on for size. You know, what if in these AR goggles it could help you with the positioning of your hands by having you match an AR representation of your stroke, of the entry into the water of where it's passing in your field of vision and help you get better, or help you do the flip turn properly, or, you know, help you know, can you reach, you know, with just a little burst to get to the wall, to get your time that much better. I mean, this is a start where it is right now, but can you imagine where that level of training, you know, could come into the mix too, to say, how can I help you get better? Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, yeah. And the thing that I found is, the power part of the stroke, I believe, would be outside of the eye vision, right? So on freestyle, or what some people call the American crawl, right?
Right.
The power of the stroke is kind of starting at with your hands near your shoulder and then pushed down towards your waist, which would be outside of vision. Breaststroke is very different. All of it, your hands would be in where your vision could see them.
Right.
Backstroke would be really interesting to see what it would do with these glasses, right? Because again, the power of the stroke, the hand would not be in view, because it's as the hand drops by your ear and hits the water and then forces back down to your waist.
Right.
Butterfly would be another interesting one. Yeah, I think that would be really cool to see what they could do with that. And, you know, they've got a built-in app that syncs up to your phone for all the detail that you want. They don't integrate with HealthKit yet, so that's not cool, because I definitely would want that. I can't remember if they said there was a little bit of a bone conduction to hear something, because what would be really cool is if they added a bone conduction with the goggle piece, and then you could like listen to podcasts while you swim.
Games at work. That'd be great. We love that.
These are very cool. Everyone I showed them to were like, wow, you can't really tell that they're that different than regular goggles.
Exactly.
So the design is really nice.
So if we move from that to the more usual version of AR, which is something via your phone's camera that you're holding your phone out in front of you, we have an example, and I think we've chatted about this before, but this is an even more improved version of Google Maps having an AR capability to it, which I love this user interface so much more, where it shows you kind of a map at the bottom part of your phone, and then through the camera lens, it's showing you directly about, hey, where are you going next? So
yeah, what they've done, they've actually matched up a lot of the technology into one app now, because what they're really doing, which is cool, is they're leveraging the knowledge that they've gained from Street View in order to dynamically do the overlay. Say, yeah, you're facing the direction that we know you're facing because we can see that building. Because I don't know if you've had this happen. I have, where you get to a new location and you pull out your phone because you're going to walk somewhere.
It doesn't know where I'm facing.
And it doesn't know, am I going left or right?
Yeah.
Right? Yep. And you have to walk a little bit, and then suddenly it goes, oh, you're going the wrong direction. And then you turn around, you walk back the other way.
You look, you feel goofy, right? It's like, oh,
you feel
I don't
goofy.
Know where I am.
You look goofy. And you know what? You're kind of goofy. But, you know, also holding your phone out in front of you, I think that's kind of annoying. And until we get those acceptable Google Glass models or Apple glasses or, you know, Google contact lenses or whatever, to where it's not that obvious. Because if I see somebody walking around looking at their phone as they're trying to find something, and I was, say, a pickpocket, I'd be like, that's a target.
Oh, yeah. Yep, exactly.
I thought this was really, really cool. I think the design looks really nice. And for the technology that exists today, I think this is nice. I'm impressed. I'll have to try it out soon.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. Related, but a little different, is an article we found.
Exactly the same, but totally different.
totally different, but it's the same. Is that Apple is now going to be hosting 90-minute sessions in their various stores to allow people to play around to interact with art, specially created art. And there's also going to be some concepts of art walks, where you would walk around in a particular city, and they've listed a few, like Tokyo or London, and you could take a look at the art and through a special designed app on your iPhone to experience more of what the art is about. So I thought this was kind of interesting, and I thought it was interesting, too, to have this be in the store as an introduction for people to begin to get some feel for how does AR actually work, especially if you haven't done Pokemon or you haven't done, you know, something like the Harry Potter game or something different like that. So I liked it because it's an introduction into the world of AR and helping people see, you know, how might this help them in their day-to-day life going into the future.
Yeah, I thought this was cool, and some of the examples are really neat. And by the way, I know we talked about the Harry Potter game a while back, and you were wondering why it was so hard to do the wand motions.
Yes.
You do realize that it's both speed and accuracy.
Oh, yeah.
So you could be extremely accurate, but then you're slow and you lose.
Swish and flick.
So it's speed and accuracy, and the secret is potions.
Drink heavily.
Yeah. So just letting you know, man.
So speaking of goofy things, the Disney folks have created an app that you can now bring to bear at the new Star Wars Galaxy's Edge attraction. And it also uses AR to allow you to integrate in your physical and virtual experience. So we've talked a little bit about Galaxy's Edge already before. You and I both have not had the opportunity to go. That's probably a little bit longer trip than just lunch, but you, whatever. I'm eager to see this. And what I really loved about reading about this particular implementation is it's a way of engaging with people into the Star Wars world before you arrive, while you're there and interacting with the environment and the things that you can see, as well as having the extensibility of when you leave that there's more that could happen. So the quests that you might be encouraged to play, the bonus points that they might introduce, the ways of getting, you know, some sort of in-world currency that could happen that might give you access to certain special things or open Easter eggs up you might not otherwise see. The combination of the real and the virtual, the digital and the three-dimensional, this is an amazing thing moving in just that exact direction that we've talked about for years and we're predicting, and here it is. So that's why I thought this was going to be something really fun to bring up here.
Yeah, it looks interesting, having not had a chance to actually even load the app or even think about it. I'll wait till I go to Galaxy's Edge, which means it'll probably never be on my mission.
Well, I'm waiting to go as well, because it's not like I'm going to be, you know, translating from what am I translating from, the Star Warsese language.
Star Wars Ease, I think that's like the technical term.
Arabish, that's what it is. Ugh. Into English, you know, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of that around here, but, you know, maybe I'll find some. Who knows?
Cool.
We're going to run out of time, and we've got so much more to talk about. Is there anything that you are, like, from our last series of things that you definitely want to bring into the show, Michael?
The only one I'd bring into, because there was a big controversy about this one when it first came out and people kind of freaked out, even though it was nothing new and the app's been around forever, is the app that took selfies and turned them into classical portraits.
Yes.
And the reason I call it out specifically is because it goes back to the data points that are necessary to do things like understand facial expression, and the machine learning around that, which goes back to our couple of articles at the beginning of today's episode, where we talked about the drivers and yawning and driver safety, et cetera. And the way we constantly improve machine learning around facial recognition, facial expression, et cetera. The article that talks about this talks about what are called GAN models, or generative adversarial network models, that kind of set models against each other to constantly improve something,
right?
And to get the most realistic, whatever result that is. And I thought this was really, really cool, right? The Face app that's been out for, I think, 2.5, 3 years. And I remember the very first time it was out, it was kind of cool, and then it died off. And this is the one that now will take your selfie and turn it into a classical work of art version of what that selfie would have looked like if it was done as a painting back in the era of the 1700s, 1600s, 1500s painting.
A little Van Gogh-esque, yes.
Yeah. And I think this was really, really cool. I think what it does as an output is really amazing. And it shows you the power of driving these GAN network models into machine learning. I think it's really cool.
Well, and you actually had a picture or portrait done via this process too. So
yes,
and
I
that
did.
Came out incredible. So
yeah.
Love
that. I'm like, who's that guy?
Yeah.
He's quite distinguished.
Looks pretty good. I like that.
So,
all right. Well that's about how much time we have for today. And there was so much more to cover. So we'll include a bunch in the show notes just so that they're there and you can discover and find them. And gosh, Michael, if you've got an idea, you have something like Kirk did that you want us to talk about, how could you get that to us?
Well, you could go to our Facebook page at Facebook.com/GamesAtWorkBiz and post it there and we'll see it.
Yeah. Be awesome. All right. Well, until next time, we're going to sign off and we'll say see ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.